Jacksonville, Florida, one of the most dangerous cities in the U.S. for walking and bicycling. This hour, how advocates are pressing for change after the death of one well-known local cyclist. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Make sure to catch our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe there or watch video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. And just ahead, how the death of a beloved local journalist is reviving a discussion in this city about bike safety in Jacksonville, or rather the lack of it. Get on the line now. 549-2937. Then later, he's an amazing local talent headed to Juilliard in the fall. But 18-year-old Julian Robertson needs your support to fund his New York adventure at the prestigious art school. We'll tell you how you can be part of that, plus The Spectator with some ideas for your weekend, including a big party at the local nonprofit Rethreaded. All of that ahead. But first this hour, the recent death of former Times Union editorial writer Wayne Ezell shocked and saddened this community. The 72-year-old Ezell died last week after his bicycle was struck by a pickup truck in Iowa. He was taking part in an annual seven-day ride across the state. It's called Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. It's the oldest, largest, and longest bicycle touring event in the world. Tragically and ironically, Ezell was struck and killed just as riders in this 43rd annual event were preparing for their first ever Mile of Silence in memory of those who were killed or injured while cycling. Wayne Ezell's death has reminded all of us, particularly cycling enthusiasts in this area, of the dangers of taking to the open road on your bike. It's a sore point here in Jacksonville, which is consistently rated as one of the worst cities in the nation when it comes to the safety and accessibility of biking and walking for cyclists and pedestrians. But there are advocates working to change that, and we are going to begin the hour with a closer look. As we welcome Matt Uhrig, he's the founder of Bike Jacks, advocacy for bicycles as transportation. Good morning.
Morning.
And also with us, Michelle Tapuni. She's chair of the Jacks 2025 Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Task Force. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Already getting your calls. I'm not surprised. Our listeners are very engaged on this topic. As we talk about the death of the TU's Wayne Ezell during a cycling race in Iowa, what are your thoughts about what can be done to make the First Coast safer for bicyclists and pedestrians? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Matt Uhrig, founder of Bike Jacks, let's begin with you. When we got the news that Wayne Ezell had died in this big cycling event in Iowa, people were so saddened and frustrated by that. Because they weren't surprised. It's common for cyclists to be struck down by a car or a vehicle that doesn't see them. Why is cycling still in this country so dangerous for people that want to pursue this as a form of transportation?
Well, it's the fact of riding a bicycle, the simple act of riding a bicycle is in no way, shape, form a dangerous activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I can prove that because we don't encourage our 3 to 7 year olds to learn and participate in life-threatening activities. Cycling in this country is dangerous because of the infrastructure. Everything is designed around the automobile, and the bicycle is supposed to fit within that infrastructure, and that is what makes it life-threatening. And I don't know how a car cannot see somebody who is 6 to 8 feet tall on a bicycle at any given point.
Right. And Michelle Tapuni, you chaired the Jacks 2025 Task Force on Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety. And we have a lot of work to do here in Jacksonville, Florida. We have been ranked the worst city in the U.S. for pedestrians, the 5th worst in the U.S. for bicycle safety, the 4th worst for the numbers of people who walk to work. We're not a walkable or bicycle-friendly city, even though there's this incredible desire to change that. What did we learn from the task force, and how do you see this city looking at this issue?
Thanks for asking. The great part about the task force is we had so many stakeholders in the room, everyone from people that are avid bicyclists to people that bike to get to work and in their daily lives, pedestrians, and then the JTA, City of Jacksonville, the DOT, the JSO was a big piece of that, as well as the North Florida TPO. And what we all came to the consensus on is it's a combination of culture and design. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to just talk about awareness is a big piece of it, and how people, once they get in their cars, and I think especially now with the distraction, you're not just driving when you're in your car, but also being able to kind of turn the Titanic when you're talking about design, something mm-hmm. that's been designed 10 years ago. I think the Furlough Warren Bridge Project is a perfect example of how citizen advocacy and some city council leadership helped us to get that design changed as a city, where now there is a bicycle pedestrian path that will be included in that new project. But mm-hmm. also the connectivity is a huge issue. Here we have, and the numbers might be a little bit different now, but about 170 miles worth of bike lanes that don't connect to each other. So someone will be riding and all of a sudden they're out of road. I think there's just so many things like that. And making sure that we don't only talk about bicycle and pedestrian when it relates to recreational activity, but also the people that live in neighborhoods that rely on that mode of transportation to get to work, get home, and to take care of their families.
And Matt Uhrig, as we look at this combination of culture and design, what do you see as the biggest impediments? We're on this show right now, we're talking about raising awareness. How do you see the city going about addressing some of these infrastructure and design issues that, as Michelle pointed out, right now they're baked in the cake? It's not easy to completely revamp an infrastructure. What do you think needs to be done?
A lot of it needs to be torn down to the ground and started all over. I mean, we have highway or expressway type infrastructure going through residential areas. Atlantic Beach Boulevard are prime examples. That little interchange there is insane. Mm-hmm. 103rd Street is one of the highest pedestrian death rates in this city. In fact, that one little corridor is one of the highest in the country. And it's simply because crosswalks are over half a mile apart. When you need to go across the street, who's going to walk a half a mile to get across the street?
Right. Yeah, it's just too difficult. And Michelle Tapuni, what about the fact that other large cities have dedicated employees responsible for bicycle pedestrian issues? Jacksonville has no full-time bicycle pedestrian coordinator in city government. Plans for new roads, resurfacing projects aren't reviewed by a biking walking expert. We're not building what they call, at least not in terms of how we compare to other cities, building what is known as a complete street. I mean, I've seen some streets around town that are complete streets where there are really good sidewalks, really good bike lanes, but that's not universal.
Yeah, I think there's definitely been some movement on that. Actually, while the task force was in session, Denise Chaplick was hired as the bicycle pedestrian coordinator. She has since left that position, but they've hired a new person. Her name is Amy Ingalls. I believe she's been in the position for about 2 months. I spoke with her yesterday just to get some update on some of the latest statistics. But the other piece of that pie is really the Context Sensitive Streets Committee, which was formed as part of, I believe that was under the mobility plan. I could be wrong about that, but there is a context-sensitive streets committee, and I think one of the people we really want to look to that was instrumental in making those things happen was Councilwoman Lori Boyer, now Council President Lori Boyer.
Yeah, and she has led on this issue.
Yes.
Yeah, the city council adopted a mobility plan. It called for massive improvements to walking and bicycling facilities and access in this city. Matt Uhrig of Bike Jacks, how much more work do you think the city leadership needs to do on this issue?
We've got a long way to go, and we have created awareness over the last 5 or 6 years. And there are great people within the city government. Lori is one of them. We've actually got some really fine people at FDOT now, within JTA's infrastructure, who are really pushing the charge now. I do expect to see really good things happening. And the fact that our city is actually hiring bicycle ped coordinators now is a massive jump forward for us.
A big step. And jammed lines as we talk about the death of the Times Union's Wayne Ezell, the retired editorial writer, was killed during a big cycling event in Iowa. It's reminded us of the strong push by advocates here in this city to make take Jacksonville from worst to first, one of the worst cities in the country for walkers and cyclists. What do you think needs to be done about this issue? 549-2937. Drew is on the line all the way from Utah. Hey, Drew, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in all the way from Utah this morning.
Well, thank you. There's just so much to talk about here, but Wayne was a customer and a friend of mine, and he's a really nice man. And he's the third person I know who has died in the last 5 years biking in Jacksonville, you know, from Jacksonville. And, you know, in all three situations, they were hit from behind, you know, clear day, no reason, no excuse. And then the first two cases, you know, David Batten and Jared Bynum, no charges were filed, you know.
Yeah.
And
did you did you move because of this issue? That's what I'm being told.
Yes. You know, I'm, you know, turned 50 a few years back, and I've been in the bicycle business all my life. I love bicycles, and to live in Jacksonville, it was like, you know, being a snow skier living in Hawaii. I mean, it just made no sense to me to live in the worst city in the country for cycling, being a cycling enthusiast. And I'd sort of given up. And you know, a big part of the problem is, you know, the police are doing a horrible job on our streets. You know, the bad drivers and bad cyclists. You know, you see half the cyclists you see are riding on the wrong side of the road. You know, I say all the time, you could drive around Jacksonville, you know, at twice the speed limit with a naked person on the roof of your car and not get pulled over. I mean, the police are not patrolling the streets enough. And, you know, currently there is no future for bicycles to ride on the roads. It's too dangerous. The League of American Cyclists says that less than 7% of our population feels comfortable riding on the roads anymore. And
in
the bicycle business, people come in all the time wanting to know, hey, I just can't do this anymore. I'm too scared. Can you help me sell my bike?
So where did you move to, Drew? Are you in Salt Lake, Park City? Where are you now?
I'm in Ogden, Utah, which, you know, is just very, you know, the mayor rides his bike to work here. I mean, it's just a really...
And what's it like there on your bike in Ogden as compared to here? What's the difference?
Well, it's a night and day difference. You know, it's... And as a pedestrian, you just walk up to the corner of a street and the cars just stop.
Are you saying in Ogden, Utah, that people in their cars are much more aware of you on your bicycle and more careful?
Oh yeah, big time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a huge difference.
Is the infrastructure different?
There's you know, more bike paths and stuff here, but you know, Ogden doesn't have a ton yet, but they do have, it's written in their plan with the Utah Department of Transportation, all the main roads in Ogden are getting not just bike lanes, but protected bike lanes. You know, which is a huge difference.
Yeah. Okay. So appreciate you calling in this morning from Ogden, Utah.
Well, there's one other thing that I just wish that you would, you know, there's the Florida Bicycle Association has a group of people who are militant cyclists who are against bike lanes. And that was like the final, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back for me is that some of the people that are involved in the Jacksonville biking community are against bike lanes, which is crazy.
Hmm.
And they actually went to the RAP, Riverside Avenue Preservation Society meeting a few years ago and did a presentation on why bike lanes are dangerous. And I can send you the email with a link to all this information.
Yeah, please do. Send that. I do have to move on and get a few more callers on, Drew. We've got a lot of people. But thank you.
All right. Thanks for doing the story. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Really quickly, and then we'll go back to the phones. Michelle said it's like a snow skier living in Hawaii to be a cyclist enthusiast in Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. As someone who now works downtown and has become more of a pedestrian, there is a challenge even just trying to be in the crosswalk when you're supposed to be in the crosswalk.
And Matt, he said that even people pushing for bicycle safety are against bike lanes in this city. Is that right?
There's a segment.
And are they carrying the day in this conversation?
They are not. They actually have faded quite a bit from our scene. They've also been eliminated from the Florida Bicycle Association, and actually their Florida Bicycle Association has retooled and is a very positive influence as of now.
Let's go to Patrick in Jacks Beach. Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning. I was really saddened to hear about Mr. Rizal's death. I live in Jacksonville Beach, and I cycle out here a lot. I've been a cyclist for many years. And I think there are two things that have nothing to do with infrastructure that could make cycling a little bit safer, and that is, first of all, there's a lot of ignorance among motorists about what cyclists can and cannot do, where they can and cannot ride. I've ridden down streets in Jacksonville Beach on the right-hand side as far to the right as I can and had people tell me to get on the sidewalk, which is not where bicycles are supposed to be. So motorists are not aware of what rights bicycle riders have on our main roads in Florida. And the other thing is cyclists themselves. As a regular cyclist, I constantly see people blowing through stop signs, not signaling, riding on the wrong side of the road, riding two or three abreast. So, you know, the problem goes both ways. Beyond just infrastructure, you got motorists who need to know what the rules are, and cyclists as well, who need to follow those rules and cycle a little bit more defensively and be a little bit more aware of what's going on.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Patrick.
Point.
Thanks, Patrick. How do we make that happen? Michelle Tapuni.
That was a very big conversation during the task force and subsequent to that with JSO in the room, is how do you balance education and enforcement? And is it just about stopping people, whether they're riding a bike or in a car, and giving them a ticket or trying to educate them, maybe give them a ticket with a pamphlet, and, you know, what is that balancing act? Because that was definitely a complaint during the sessions.
Here's an email from Chantal. Bike safety and rules of riding should be taught in school at each grade level and again when people get their driver's license. Police should enforce more warning and penalty on cyclists who don't obey the rules and motorists who don't respect the cyclists. Mm-hmm. Al is in Riverside. Hey, Al, what are your thoughts?
Hey, I really want to... first couple callers on their points. I agree completely. Jacksonville is not a bike-friendly city. All you have to do is drive, you know, an hour and a half west to Gainesville and see what a more bike-friendly city looks like, where they're building bicycle lanes and complete roads. But I want to echo what the last caller said about the education. As a driver, I'm constantly making sure I give a bicyclist on the road, you know, 5 or 6 feet when I pass them. But by the same token, I used to live in a neighborhood in Mandarin where on a monthly basis, one of the local bicycle shops would host a large bicycle ride, and you would have a swath of 50 or 60 bicyclists riding two and three abreast, coming down the road as, you know, as a pack of cars blowing through every single stop sign they hit. And this is without a police escort, which you're supposed to have a large group like that, you know, doing a ride like that.
Okay.
But just the willful disregard for traffic safety, the bike needs to be on the road, which I have every, you know, police, they have the right to be, they need to follow the same rules. And when I was in school 35 years ago, we were taught those things. We were taught hand signals for left and right on a bicycle and how you were supposed to behave in traffic. But they need to do that again.
Yeah, I remember that too, Al. Matt, is that no longer being taught?
No, it's not being taught as rigorously as it should be. There should be more education, not only in schools, but also in the driver's test.
The caller mentioned Gainesville. Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Annette. Gainesville has created bike trails that are pedestrian and bike friendly. Matt writes, in Austin, Texas, they have some that look like mini roads with 10 feet of space between you and the car.
We do have a segregated bike path that has gone on Kernan Boulevard, and it goes for 2 or 3 miles. And if you want to test the difference, park at UNF, ride your bike from UNF down to Kernan Road to where the beginning of that segregated path starts, and watch your blood pressure drop once you get onto that.
All right. And we are talking about bike safety this morning on this show. Jacksonville, one of the most dangerous cities in the country for walkers and cyclists. The death of the Times Union's Wayne Ezell at a big bike race in Iowa has revived this discussion. In a moment, we'll tell you about an upcoming meeting as the Jacksonville Pedestrian and Bicycle Master Plan study is discussed at a couple of public meetings in the city. More on that in a moment. But right now, let's go to Susie, who's downtown. Hi, Susie. How are you?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Great. I want to bring this home because the prime example of where these problems converge is the Beauclair to Scott Mill to Mandarin Road area. I live in that area. I travel Scott Mill and Mandarin, and last weekend I almost got had a head-on collision with a car. And what's the problem is there's so many curves, and people get frustrated behind these cyclists. I get it, but they'll pass on a blind curve. And I had a good friend who was in a head-on collision down Mandarin Road with a guy pulling lawn equipment who couldn't wait a minute and a half till they cleared the blind curve. So he decided to pass the pack of bicyclists riding three abreast on a blind curve, and she was coming in the other direction, heading to the airport, and was hit head-on and suffered fairly serious injuries. And to me, that area is where somebody needs to patrol. I've been in touch with my council person. They've been in touch with the zone police chief because there needs to be monitoring on that corridor, because it's not just the cyclists that will be injured. It's the cars. It's people driving cars.
Sure. Thank you, Susie. Michelle Tapuni.
I think, you know, it's definitely a challenge, and to go to her point, it is dangerous. I got some latest statistics from Amy Ingalls. This is the 2016 Alliance for Biking and Walking benchmark report, and this is so far this year, and remember, we're only at the beginning of August. In Jacksonville, we've had 365 bicycle pedestrian crashes. 17 of those were fatal, and 33 resulted in an incapacitating injury. So when we did our final report in January of 14, we were at over 500 incidents. So the education piece, I think, is a big part of it. And really we've got to get awareness to these motorists and to the bicyclists on what those rules of the road are and how to, you know, respect each other.
Matt Urich, where's a one-stop shop that people could look at to refresh themselves on the rules of the road that both cyclists and drivers should be following?
Google.
Just Google it.
Just Google it.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
But people don't know. They're disregarding.
I have to be honest that I'm occasionally one of those cyclists, because the laws were written for cars. I have no pillars. I have an unobstructed view. And when I'm sitting in an intersection, I'm at the most vulnerable point. Cars are cutting corners. Cars are going around me to turn right. If I can go and if I can clear that intersection, I'm clearing that intersection.
Because you feel like a sitting duck, right?
I'm a sitting duck sitting at most intersections.
Let's connect with Deb in Ponte Vedra right now. Hi, Deb. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
So I'm the founder of an initiative called the Ponte Vedra Palm Valley Greenway and Preserve. And I'm also part of the new St. John's County Greenways and Trails Coalition. And what my initial focus is, we are trying to create a 7-mile multi-use path throughout Ponte Vedra and Palm Valley that will connect multiple destinations. But the key part of some of the initiatives that we're looking at with the county is to try and create traffic-separated paths, because in my opinion, as we all know, with people texting and driving, you can have as many rules and regulations alongside the road, but it's real easy to kind of veer off. And so in addition to that, we're looking at the Palm Valley Community Association doing a reach out to the community on bicycle safety, especially in light of the recent tragedy that we've had here in Palm Valley, where a young man lost his life. And so there's a symposium coming up in St. John's County. We already had one at the southern part of the county, but there's a symposium coming up in October. It will be held somewhere near Nocatee, and it's open to the public to get their feedback on, you know, their concerns. And it's related to hiking, biking, horseback riding. So we'll get the word out. And, the entire county is looking at a master plan. They're redoing it right now.
Wow, okay.
And again,
I'm so glad you shared. Yeah,
Deb, traffic separated.
I'm so glad you shared this with us. And we will follow up with you after the program about that. Michelle Tapuni, what about that?
I think it's great that I know St. John's County has really been focusing on modes of transportation and how to keep things safe. The one thing I would say in Jacksonville that we have as a resource, and if if this is a passion of yours, I highly recommend, you know, your voice matters. So there is a Bicycle Pedestrian Action Committee. It meets the first Thursday of every month at 5:30 in the Ed Ball Building. If this is an important issue to you, lend your voice to that group. And that is a group that, you know, will work directly with the administration and with the city council members. And I would also reach out to Council President Boyer. I mean, this is a great opportunity for someone you know is an advocate for these issues and tied into the context-sensitive streets issue that can really help maybe to move this along.
Mike on the West Side. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I want to apologize. My comment has changed since I first called. I believe in situational awareness, and when I've been riding a bike a long time. When I moved to Jacksonville, I got a mountain bike because, as far as I'm concerned, riding on the streets are too dangerous. If you ride on the streets, especially three abreast on that Mandarin Road that lady was talking about, and I know that road, you're crazy. I mean, I have to question your whole your smarts doing something like that. And and I just want people to be, you know, aware of their surroundings and whatnot. And that's how people should bike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Gosh, so much feedback coming in on Twitter and Facebook. On our Facebook page, Odette writes, a bike safety campaign to remind motorists that cyclists have an equal stake in using the roads, combined with cycling safety tips. We need that. We need more share the road awareness. And here are a couple of emails for you to react to, Matt Urig, from John in Ponte Vedra. Infrastructure changes are expensive and require long-range planning, but we must pursue and budget for them. In the short term, why not embark on a much less expensive effort to educate the motoring public about bicycles? And here's another one from Diana. On October 25th, Gretchen Seth was hit by a woman in a gold SUV out at the beaches. Gretchen was thrown across the road, which was near a fire station. Paramedics picked her up. Police were present. The women apologized. Gretchen was taken to Mayo and later looked up the police report. None was ever filed, and she is still looking for the woman in the gold SUV. Please let your audience know.
That's a huge problem. Collision investigation here is, in my opinion, horrible. Almost always the victim is blamed. The cyclist is almost always.
And why is that?
Mostly because investigators, they're seeing it from an automotive point of view. They've got the windshield perspective. They don't know what it's like to be on the road. And even if the cyclist is hit from behind, you know, the media and the police departments put the blame on the victim.
Michelle.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is a very personal thing for me. JAX 2025 didn't know this when they asked me to chair the Bicycle Pedestrian Task Force, but my younger brother was killed when he was on his bicycle.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. It's been, we were all kids, but, you know, it had an impact on the family. And I remember my mother fighting to try to get a bike lane between the major neighborhoods in the area and the baseball field. And it took, I can't remember how long it took to do it. And I think when they called me, it just felt like a full circle that I could kind of pick that back up and really look at what's important and what's happening in the city.
So you have chaired that task force, and you want to make sure that we mention that the city is hosting a couple of public meetings to discuss Jacksonville's pedestrian and bicycle master plan. How can people be part of this?
Oh, this is a really perfect timing, and it's a great opportunity, again, to make your voice heard and to bring these issues to the city and the Bicycle Pedestrian Coordinator. Tuesday, August 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Jewish Community Alliance, and Thursday, August 25th from 5 to 7 at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. And there is information at www.cojpedbike.com.
COJPEDBike.com. Go there if you care about this issue, and clearly a lot of our listeners do. Thanks so much, Michelle Tapuni, who chaired that JAX 2025 task force, and Matt Urig, founder of Bike JAX. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
And for those that really respected and admired the late Wayne Ezell, who was killed in that Iowa bike race, just go to the StoryCorps website. That, of course, is the public radio mainstay that records family conversations at the Library of Congress. You can listen to Wayne talking with his grandkids. It's a really nice segment. Much more still ahead later, The Spectator with weekend events. But up next, a local talent's dream coming true. The incredible story of 18-year-old Julian Anderson and how you can help him. Head to the Big Apple and Juilliard. Back in a moment.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
Comic book movies are all the rage in Hollywood right now, and yeah, they are making a lot of money, but...
critics didn't like it, fans didn't like it, and it wasn't the introduction to this DC comic book world they wanted. So now that's on Suicide Squad.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Will supervillains save Warner Brothers? That's next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air.
Did you know that Stevie Wonder is my favorite?
He's the best.
That's Michelle Obama in a car driven by James Corden for one of his carpool karaoke videos. Stevie Wonder and Adele also did those videos with Corden. We'll talk with Corden, the host of CBS's Late Late Show. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Sam Brody gets why so many people are moving to the Houston metro area.
You move to this area and you're like, cool, I have a water view. This is a great place to be.
Plus, good jobs, great schools. But there's a catch.
The last thing you think about is 20 feet of water coming up here.
On the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Marathon swimming is a grueling physical test. 6.2 miles in open water.
You had to be a little weird to want to put yourself through like 2 hours or more of pain.
And Haley Anderson will have to persevere in Rio's notorious polluted waters. An athlete driven to excel later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's an incredible story of triumph over daunting circumstances. 18-year-old Julian Anderson, a graduate of Jacksonville's Douglas Anderson School of the Arts, has been accepted to Juilliard, the nation's premier performing arts school. Julian is one of only 18 students in the world admitted to Juilliard's acting program this fall, but he needs to raise some money to pay for his first year of college. So Julian Robertson is using his talents and drawing on his experiences of growing up with struggles on Jacksonville's North Side. He's written a play called Broke. It's a fundraiser for his first year expenses at his dream school. We're pleased to welcome Julian Robertson, not Anderson, along with two of the cast members from Broke, this new play, Sophia Rizzuto and Terrence Scott. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Julian, this is such an inspiring story. Tell us how this all came about. You were at Douglas Anderson School of the Arts, studying drama, studying writing.
Yeah.
And you had this dream to go to Juilliard, right?
Yeah, I was sitting in my room working on my monologues in my junior year, getting ready for our end of the year kind of final exam for theater. And I was watching videos on colleges, and I came across the Juilliard videos, and I just decided I was going to go there. Not really thinking that I would actually get in, but, you know, I guess one thing happened, you know, one thing led to another, and then here I am.
And I read that when you were in Manhattan walking to your audition, you initially walked the wrong way or almost didn't make it. Is that right?
Yeah, they ended up having to back the audition up an hour because of the snow. There was a blizzard in New York when I went up there. That's my first time seeing snow. It was the second worst blizzard in New York City. And I got off the train.
Oh, you've never seen snow?
I'd never seen snow.
That was your first snow?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. In a blizzard in New York.
New York, yeah. And so I get off the train after the train had a detour, and I'm lost. And I start walking a half a mile in the wrong way.
You're there by yourself?
With my mom.
Your mom went, okay.
My mom. And so she's walking with me significantly slower. And we're walking the wrong way, and we realize, and we start calling the school. We're panicked because we're going to be late. And so my mom's just like, go ahead, go ahead. And I've got holes in my shoes.
Oh, my gosh. One of only 18 students in the world accepted to this program.
Yes, ma'am.
Such an achievement. But you can't just pay for it out of the with the drop of a hat. Juilliard is very expensive.
Yeah.
That led you to write this play. It's called Broke. Tell us about it.
Broke is centered around two characters. It's Marcus and Red. And these two characters having, you know, struggles in their personal lives, you know, in who they are, what their purpose is, and just finding a meaning, and you know, just going, surviving day to day in this neighborhood. And their lives come together over a debt, because Marcus has dug a hole for himself too big to get out, and so their struggles to just gain control of their lives drive them into conflict.
And how much of, it's a fictional story, but how much of your own growing up experiences in Jacksonville played into writing this?
So much. I mean, I think I get a lot of these characters and a lot of these circumstances from things that I've seen or things that I've lived through. And
what neighborhood did you grow up in?
I've moved around a lot. I think I initially moved here over by Riverside, but I've been living on the north side of Jacksonville for the past 3 or 4 years. Yeah.
And that's how Broke came about. Sophia Rizzuto and Terrence Scott, two of the stars of this show. Sophia, who do you play?
I play Alex. I'm old flame of Marcus and kind of friends with him and Scott. So that's my main connection to in that show.
Uh-huh. And what's it been like to be part of this production?
It's been incredible. It's really interesting working on a show with such high stakes and high emotional levels in a show like that. Just like the range of circumstance and emotion that we go through in the course of like an hour and a half is incredible. So getting to work on something that is so highly emotional and pulling that out of myself is pretty amazing.
And Terrence Scott, who do you play in Broke?
I'm playing Red.
Okay. Yeah. And what's Red's story?
Well, Red, he recently just got out of jail. Or rather, he's in jail. And David, which is a cop in our play, he decides that Red could be better used as an underground way of getting into infiltrating the crime in the place we are. So I'm pretty much this underground guy that goes around beating people up to make payments to the police to keep them out of trouble. So, yeah, that's pretty much, in the beginning, it's pretty much just me kicking butt.
Wow. And yeah. Julian, these are some of your former classmates, right, that you've cast in this play.
Yes, they are.
What's that process like?
It is amazing, because I guess I go seeing them in the school environment, you know, working hard and trying to get better at what they do as artists. And then, you know, we've got this opportunity right before we leave to get together and collaborate like one last time before we go out and do these amazing things. And it's so sweet. To really get to share this creative experience with these guys one more time.
And this is a really important new work from a local young playwright. It's also, as we said, a fundraiser.
Yeah.
How much is 1 year at Juilliard?
So 1 year, that's tuition and room and board, would be $61,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship for my tuition, but the room and board is about $15,000, which does not always cover the other expenses. I mean, I've got to get clothes and bus passes and things like that to be able to get around and function. And so we're really trying to raise a good bit of money.
Right. So that you can go to Juilliard, stay at Juilliard, and graduate from Juilliard.
Yes.
And an easy way that people in this community can support this is to go see this play. It's a new play from DA graduate Julian Robertson. It's Broke, and the premiere is this Friday at the Performers Academies. How many shows, guys?
We've got three. We've got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
How much are tickets?
Tickets are $15 at the door.
$15 at the door. Go on out. Friday night is the premiere, and shows through the weekend of the new play, Broke, by Douglas, the pride of Douglas Anderson, Julian Robertson, actor, playwright, and 2016 graduate. He and his cast here to talk about this, Sophia Rizzuto and Terrence Scott, also starring in this new original production. Julian beating some very long odds. He has been accepted to Juilliard in New York, one of only 18 students worldwide admitted to this acting program. But, of course, he needs to raise some money to pay for this. So go to the Performers Academy website. They're on Beach Boulevard. And find out about time, show times, or just show up Friday night for the premiere of Broke at the Performers Academy this Friday, August 5th, with shows through the weekend. Julian Robertson, Sophia Rizzuto, and Terrence Scott break a leg and... So glad to share your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jackie Carter, Executive Secretary for Duval County's Emergency Operations Center. Have a plan for home, work, and school. Planning can save you valuable time and money in a disaster. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Donald Trump has not released his tax returns. If this continues, he'll be the first major party presidential nominee in 40 years not to disclose them. The history of tax disclosure by presidential candidates and whether the public has the right to know. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Well, if you love Pokemon Go and public radio, show us on Instagram. It's our I Love WJCT contest. All you have to do is post an Insta showing how much you love Pokemon Go and public radio. Be creative. This Friday, we'll publish our favorite Insta photo of the week. Just make sure to use the hashtag I Love WJCT and subscribe to our news site, WJCTnews.org, and you can see your winning photo in our First Read e-newsletter. Well, Rethreaded, the local nonprofit dedicated to helping women escape the sex trade, is marking a milestone this weekend. It's fifth anniversary in Jacksonville. Director of Marketing Ansley Bush is here now with a preview, and congratulations, 5 years of Rethreaded. That's amazing how fast it's gone by.
Thank you. We thank you for having us. And we can't believe that it's been 5 years. I mean, it's been, the fastest and slowest time. So much has happened in the past 5 years.
It's grown a lot. And your director, Christian Keene, founded this organization as a way to help women who are trying to break free of prostitution and trafficking. And you take... materials like old t-shirts and other things, and you upcycle them and teach women a skill at the same time. It's such a breakthrough idea.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we've been most excited about is taking this safe, viable, dignity-giving work to these women, and we've taken a step up and really brought more than just production, and now these women are stepping into leadership roles, and, you know, that's when we really know that we've grown as a company, as we've seen women, you know, start with an organization and, you know, grow in their professional careers.
And people can support this amazing effort with a big party you're having Saturday at your location on Barnett Street. What's going to be happening?
Yeah, we love to celebrate with the community because the community has been so incredibly supportive of us. We have all the local favorites at the event, live music by Canary in the Coal Mine and Tom and Natalie, and then food and beverage, great food and beverage, what Smoke and Barbecue, Hippo Pops, brews from Engine 15 and Bold City. We have iced coffees from Social Grounds and a wine tasting from Wine Decadence and all kinds of other fun things.
And all people have to do is show up and be part of the fun and pick up some cool items, too.
Yeah, we're really excited about releasing our Fall 16 line. There's a sneak peek of that. And this is only our second time that we've released a seasonal line. So we're really, really excited about the new items.
New items and lots of fun is Rethreaded. So it's a new story on the First Coast. Go to rethreaded.com. Stop by their big 5th anniversary party this Saturday from 10 to 2 at their location at 820 Barnett Street. Ansley Bush, Director of Marketing for Rethreaded, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And again, that big bash is this Saturday. Finally, this hour, lots to do this weekend all around the First Coast. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the Pokemon Go / playing spectator.com,
okay.
Carrie Speckman here today.
First of all, you promoted me to queen of mirth last
week. Oh, well, of course. You're the queen
of
crack-ups. You have to use alliteration in these things.
And I don't play Pokemon is how you say it, actually. I don't play it.
Really? You're too cool for that.
No, I'm too lazy.
I
can't be walking around looking. You know, I fall down all the time anyway. I can't be looking at a phone
and
to
making
find
things
stuff.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I
you
hear
know how it is.
I know. Well, you could still enter our I Love WJCT Instagram.
I did send
contest.
In my pet picture last week.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Yeah. Last week was pets. This week is Pokemon Go.
See? Pokemon.
Come up with a theme for us for next week if you
I'll
think of
I'll get right
one.
On that.
Yeah, get right on that. Why don't you?
Okay, I
will. All right. What's happening this weekend?
What's happening? Jaguars Family Night is tomorrow. It is the team's official scrimmage.
Oh, right.
Yes, and Blake Bortles will be playing, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Dante Fowler. They'll be doing autographs from former Jaguars, and then it's also Nickelodeon Worldwide Day of Play.
Oh, this is good for kids. They're going to slime
yes.
the kids.
They have a slime mountain, a slime maze.
Oh, how cute is that?
Yeah, and doors open at doors. I mean, they're not really
There's
doors.
Not really any doors.
The gate opens at 5:30. Yeah. The scrimmage starts at 6:15. It is free.
Yeah,
however,
free.
You do have to register or go to Jaguars.
Jaguars.com. All right. We talked about, Pokemon.
Pokemon.
That they're celebrating the end of summer vacation
at
this
the
Saturday
Cummer.
At the Cummer Museum with a Pokemon Go theme. Are people going to be going through the gardens playing the game?
There will be water type monsters there.
Oh, really?
Yes. Apparently, there are like some you can only get on the water or near the water. I don't understand.
you don't get any of this.
I really
this
don't.
Newfangled Pokemon craze.
I'm already on my phone way too much. That's not one more thing I need.
Okay,
that's on Saturday
at the Cummer Museum,
and it's
the,
free.
And that's free. Now Mosh is also doing a special for the new school year.
It is their 75th anniversary.
Yeah, 75 cent admission at the Mosh. How about that?
So get your quarters out.
Yeah, on Saturday.
Yes.
75 cents gets you into the mosh on Saturday. Bring the kids. It's back to school.
Yes,
the mosh.
It is. Yes, it is.
Now, what is this masquerade ball? I love those. Yeah, I love it when they have you have people in masks. That's just always so interesting.
It is a benefit. It's sweet.
It's a sweet. Okay.
It is a benefit for Dreams Come True Jacksonville.
Are you going? Are you wearing a mask? Because if you wear a mask to a masquerade ball, I don't think it would work. just venturing a wild guess.
And last time I went to Sweet, as you may recall, it was a gala.
And you wore a t-shirt and jeans to the gala.
Actually, I think I had these pants on.
Oh, really?
And a jean jacket, yeah.
You could put on the most elaborate mask in the world, but it would not work. Everyone would know it was you. And for those who aren't aware, the spectator's hair is pink.
Yes.
With a little kind of
pop.
Streak,
it's a, pop
a little
of color.
Pop of purple.
It's a pop of color.
Yeah, there's no missing you in a crowd.
No. And the orange glasses aren't really...
But you could cover those with the mask.
Unless I got a full
You could
head
do a
mask.
Wig. You could do a wig.
I'll get right on that.
You get right on that
spectator. I'll put that on my list, too.
Okay, last but not least, it is... Oh, this is cool. A Grateful Dead celebration.
Yes. This is the 21st year. It's the China Cat Sunflower Festival. And they have live music from the Ouija Brothers, Paradoxymoron.
Where are they doing this?
It is at the Carpalus...
Carpalus Museum in Springfield.
Yeah. Library, Manuscript Museum, Library Museum.
Very nice.
It's got some.
And
a long
last
name.
But not least, Maxwell is coming to the Times Union Center August 7th.
He has not released a song in 7 years. He will be here on Sunday, and this will be his last stop on the tour. So if you think you're going to have another chance, guess what?
This is it.
You're not. Also, the Suns play tonight. And the Armada play Saturday night.
Lots to do. Go to thespectator.com for your list of weekend events. And I'll see you at that masquerade ball.
I don't know. Will you? You might not see me.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast every day on iTunes and Stitcher and video on demand with our partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at why Donald Trump has not released his tax returns, the history of tax disclosure by presidential candidates, and whether the public has a right to know. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for a Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.